Welcome back to The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Mike and Scott. We get a lot of emails every week from people who want us to cover specific topics, and it's a bit of a challenge to weed through all of this material and to pick the most relevant, the most interesting, the best stories. Reporter Tanya English is here now. Hi, Tanya.
Hey, Mike.
And Tanya, you were getting a lot of emails from one guy in particular, a man on a mission.
Yes. So his name is Hooman Norchash. He's a cardiothoracic surgeon. His wife, Amy Reed, is an anesthesiologist. And about a year and a half ago, Amy had a surgery in Boston for what they thought would be a pretty uncomplicated hysterectomy to treat her fibroids. The doctor used something called a power morcellator to kind of divide up that tissue and remove it from her abdomen. But what the doctors and the couple didn't know is that Amy had a hidden cancer on her uterus. So Hooman says that using that particular device made Amy's cancer worse. And ever since then, the couple have really been on a mission to improve the safety and the regulation of medical devices. Hooman sends me constant updates on their work, and he even emails me at 11 o'clock at night.
He's a pretty pushy guy. I get emails from him, too. But that's not the only reason you wanted to cover this, right?
You know, he's not shy, and he's not at all apologetic about calling out or pressuring anyone that he thinks can help this cause. They waged an all-out media campaign, and then last year, the Food and Drug Administration issued an advisory. They call it a black box warning. It's now clear that using a morcellator comes with the risk of spreading an undetected cancer. So I sat down with Hooman and Amy, and I asked them about their campaign, and I asked about that latest win from the FDA.
So the FDA did put a black box warning, and they said this shouldn't be used on most women. But no one sees that black box. You as a patient don't ask to see your surgeon's instrument tray. So I don't see how that helps patients at all.
Is that your biggest success so far?
Well, I wouldn't call it a success, Tanya. I mean, this was actually, from our perspective,
this was
a failure. They basically were unable to ban this device.
And what are you doing to try to change that?
Well, you know, we stated the facts, and we stated it to everybody. This whole activity has probably upwards of 7,000 emails attached to it at this point, from me to the press, from me to congressional leaders, to FDA leaders.
Just as an example, I probably get 3 emails a day from you, and sometimes you forward those to other people. Tell me the strategy behind something like that.
When people at any level are involved in the blow-by-blow of what's going on, I think they get more invested in it. You know, the chances that you could you know, attract their attention is much greater.
I've been calling you crusader. Is that right?
I've objected to that, but yes,
tell
you
me,
have.
What's wrong with the term crusader?
It's not necessarily an accurate description, because here we have a practice which is, by the standards of most other surgeons, is considered a mistake. Frankly, by standards of common sense, it's, you know, you don't even have to go to medical school to understand that if you have a tumor and there's a possibility of cancer there, you should not mince it up inside someone's body.
Chime in there. I've heard you say that before.
We knew exactly what sarcoma meant. That term probably doesn't mean much to most people. But we knew if you break up a sarcoma, it's like ink. Like, you can't go back and just undo that breaking up. Like, it spreads.
They mince up this tissue with a power morcellator. Essentially, it's a meat grinder that grinds up the tissue and sucks it out of a small incision. And it's indiscriminate. If there's cancer there, the cancer will drip and spread all over the abdominal cavity. And this has been treated like, you know, sorry, you know, yeah, you have cancer. Now you have to go get chemotherapy. Meanwhile, the reality has been that in the majority of these women, the cancer was being upstaged by their doctors.
Using this process made the cancer worse.
Correct. It upstages the cancer.
Okay. Now some insurance companies are not paying.
Absolutely. I think what happened with the insurance companies, Tanya, is they looked in their databases and they came face to face with a monster. I mean, you know, so for instance, United Health looked in their database. And they're like, you know, they saw that one out of 300 of these women whose operations that they'd been funding were getting their cancers upstaged. And the downstream cost of that is exponentially larger.
Do you want to jump in?
Right. And I'm sure they sat down and it took all of an hour and said, wait, you're telling me these patients are costing $150,000 in 2 years. This is an elective procedure. We're not paying for it.
I can only imagine that data was there before. So how did that come to their attention?
We knocked on everybody's door. I mean, yeah, you know, I've sent you some of those emails where we, you know, generated, you know, I most recently generated an email to all the CEOs of Aetna, you know, and I basically asked them why in God's name would they not look at their database and modify their policy when United Health has?
You get a win, then you share the win, and then someone else changes their mind too?
I guess that you could call it that, yeah. That's right.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just asking. That seems like a strategy that's working for you.
Yeah, I mean, there are specific targets. I mean, the bloodline for this particular practice is the money that goes into funding it. So, of course, I would go after the insurance companies. Of course, I would critique them for not changing, you know.
And I've seen your emails. It doesn't bother you to call them corrupt or to use language like that.
When people are dying because people aren't thinking right, that's right. This was not self-evident to my colleagues. And so I felt that I had to get increasingly vocal and my language had to get increasingly aggressive. And I think that's not where I started. You know, that is where I started was I wanted to have a very academic discussion with a group of academic doctors at Harvard Medical School. That didn't happen.
So it was definitely a price that he paid. And they painted him or tried to paint him as hysteric, you know, this person who would jump and shout and would eventually go away.
So your fight has pivoted and expanded beyond the Morcellator machine to the way devices get to market. Is that right?
Yes. I think by and large, we've won the Morcellator fight. Morcellators are not really being used. Large academic centers, most of them don't use it. Private practices that can't afford the lawsuits. A lot of people have just stepped away from Morcellators, for better or worse. But the problem remains that today it's the Morcellator. You know, what other devices will do this to women or patients and go unrecognized for years? So until you fix the loopholes which allow devices like this to get unregulated more or less onto market and not get picked up, it's inevitable. This will come up again.
How do medical devices get to the market differently than drugs?
So the vast majority of drugs are put through clinical trials, and these are quite rigorous.
For whatever reason, the safety nets that apply to drugs never have translated over to devices. As long as you can say that a device looks like another device that's already on the market and hasn't been recalled by the FDA, then passing that device out into the marketplace is expedited.
Your husband's writing emails, your husband's calling lawmakers. Have you seen anything cross the line, or have these tactics and strategies been right on point in your mind?
So I have to tell you, it's not always been easy to watch. And the tendency has been for me to, you know, at times say like, just please, just stop. But, you know, in retrospect, I don't think it would have worked any other way. You know, and really I compare it to, like, you know, you walk past a car on a hot day and there's a kid inside and you could call the cops or a locksmith. But meanwhile, that kid's baking and you got to break the window.
That was Amy Reed and her husband, Human Norchash. They're still waging a campaign to change the rules around medical devices.
And Tanya, what is the state of Amy's health?
Unfortunately, Amy did have a reoccurrence of her cancer earlier this year, but she says she's thriving despite having stage 4 cancer.
So what's next for them in terms of their campaign?
The latest thing is that the FDA has actually gathered people in the last week or so to talk about medical devices and how to respond when there's something goes wrong with a medical device once it's already on the market. They're still working through this.
Tanya English, thank you so much.
Thank you.